Welcome to The Babblery, working, parenting, playing, voting, advocating, and creating as women, celebrating International Women's Day with KPFA Radio. This is your host, Suki Wessling. A few months after the war in Ukraine started, I reached out to my coworker, Lydia Getya. She and I both teach online courses for mostly homeschooled students, and we came about our jobs in the same way, through homeschooling our own children. Homeschooling allows families like ours to support our children's passions. One of Lydia's children is a competitive swimmer and the other is a diver. The flexibility of homeschooling allowed the family to spend a year recently in Kyiv, solidifying her children's language skills before returning to the U.S. before the war. If Lydia's life was extraordinary in an ordinary way before the war, it took a sharp turn once the country of her birth was threatened with annihilation. In the beginning of this program, I speak with Lydia about how her all-American online shopping abilities were put to the test when she found out that Ukrainian soldiers needed the most basic things, like fungal cream. Soon, she was doing the stairs in her Kansas house wearing bulletproof gear, just to learn what it would be like to be a soldier. Meanwhile, Victoria Kuchmuk was also having an ordinary life disrupted by war. She lives in a town in the west of Ukraine near the border with Belarus. Her life was one that middle-class Americans would recognize, working, hanging out with her family, going for hikes in the forest. But on the day the war started, she found herself on a cross-country trek with strangers, not knowing if she'd ever see her family again. One notable thing about this war is how so many Ukrainians have gone on with life as usual, not because they can do that, but because they have to. Victoria kept working and caring for her family, but she had a growing worry about her teen son who had become withdrawn. Victoria explains it's hard to think about adulthood, college, and career when young men are coming back to your village in coffins. That's when she connected with Lydia, and I won't spoil the story by telling the rest of it. The war in their country has heightened the importance of every decision Lydia and Victoria make and has presented them with new, difficult choices. Before, they were distant acquaintances. But in a time of war, the distance between them ends up bringing them closer. Let's begin with Lydia's story, which starts in spring 2022 as she realizes that she can't just sit back and enjoy the safety of Kansas while the country of her birth is threatened.
Right before I was about to go to bed, it was about 11 o'clock central time. My cousin called me up and says, war started in Ukraine, we're being bombed. So that's when it all started. Being born in Ukraine, it's very personal. It's my family, it's my friends, it's the streets I grew up on, it's my former classmates, it's my teachers and grandparents. It started with a phone call from a friend in Kansas City, basically in complete meltdown, saying that her mom lives near Kyiv and Kyiv is being bombed, and her mom has diabetes and needs medication, and we need to get her out of there because she's not very mobile. So when, besides even the bombs falling, it becomes very difficult to, in a situation like that, to receive medication and medical care, especially for elderly and people at risk. It started off with just my friend's mom trying to get her out. So I started, since I lived in Kyiv for 9 months last year, I just started calling my friends, neighbors, contacts at the time and saying, okay, we need to get her out, and started basically making connections, getting resources, meeting people who were very quick on their feet to react. Mm-hmm. That's how I got linked with one of the organizations that was formed by retired Ukrainian military guys. So they're no longer active duty. They're all in their late 50s and 60s. In Ukrainian, they're called Kozatskie Bratstvo. That means like the brotherhood, the warrior brotherhood kind of a thing, I guess, the translation. So they got mobilized very quickly and started getting people out of those areas. So I got contacted with them, and basically my job was to find financing for getting cars and for getting petrol, gasoline, because as you can imagine, that's became a very scarce resource in pretty much immediately. Mm-hmm. So as a person on this side, being able to kind of find support in the Ukrainian community, I started a GoFundMe page, and I was able to provide that financing for those guys, and they were able to find drivers and cars and gasoline, and they would get people out from the most horrific places. I mean, one of the scariest stories was they were getting a family out of Kharkiv, where a husband is mobile disabled. So he obviously wouldn't be able to join general evacuation on buses and trains. And as we're driving out of Kharkiv, they were shot at by Russian army. So there are bullet holes forming in the car as they drive, and they're all wearing bulletproof vests as they're leaving. And it was all extremely traumatizing, as you can only imagine. So that was a lot of stories like that. But for most parts, all of their evacuations went very smooth. They were able to get in, pick up either elderly or we also picked up people after surgery. We picked up a guy who actually just had a brain surgery like 2 weeks before the beginning of war. So he was still in the hospital when the Kiev was bombed, and they just moved him to basement of the hospital. And he was there for about a month, basically, you know, getting whatever care he could. And they released him while Kiev was still being bombed. So, but officially he's released from care. So we helped him get to Western border. And then I found medical connections with Israeli group that got him medical help and medication. And they, so I was able to connect, basically we drove him right to the border, and then they picked him up at the ambulance and kind of moved him on where it was necessary afterwards. Mm-hmm. A lot of stories like that. Once Kiev was liberated and Russian army moved out of the Kiev region, the effort with evacuation has come down, but I started receiving a lot of requests from all over, like friends whose family member is in the army, and saying, okay, those guys are basically fighting naked. They don't have helmets. They don't have the bulletproof vests. They don't have knee pads or arm pads. So they are basically on their knees and until the knees bleed, you know, fighting in street fire. So they need everything. They need Band-Aids. They need Jerusalem wraps, you know, those are the tight wraps. So everything. So from shoes, socks to everything. And this is where our community in Kansas City, and I think that's true for most Ukrainian communities in the United States and across the world, most of them have split. In some parts are focused on purely humanitarian aid. So we have a group in Kansas City that focuses on helping refugees, on helping those who left without a home, who basically standing with whatever they were standing and left their home and had to either evacuate to West Ukraine or to Poland or to Germany, focusing on medication to civilian hospitals. And there are groups that are focusing more on helping with life-saving equipment for the soldiers over there. Mm-hmm. I started off on more humanitarian side, but I had slowly transitioned more to life-saving equipment for the soldiers because my cousin's husband, he's the one who's fighting on the front lines. So talking to him, I can hear it from him firsthand, basically what's going on, where they are. Basically, the soldiers are just fighting with their free will. and mm-hmm. just optimism, and that's it. The bravery, because they got nothing. So I figured that there are a lot more humanitarian groups who are helping than those who can help and understand what's going on the front lines. And those stories are the ones that hit closest to home. You know, like one of the stories that he told me as they were coming in, going through Izum, to one of the cities that were under Russian occupation for quite a prolonged period of time. And as they were coming in into the cities, and he could see basically body parts of little kids, you know.
Oh my goodness.
It's completely destruction and devastation of whole towns. And we're not talking like a third world country. We're talking cities that, European cities. So basically, if you think equivalent of, let's say, like size of Dallas, Texas, to be completely gone to the ground and no buildings left and just complete devastation and death and people under the rebels that were screaming for help for weeks and nobody could help him. Mm-hmm. So a lot of stories like that that caused me move a little bit to kind of focus on more of like a tactical side, but they really overlap, I would say. Mm-hmm. I work with a group right now. I was two groups. One is it's called Rivne Humanitarian Hub, and it's basically a hub where from Ukrainian communities from all over the U.S. are sending aid, medication, food, clothing, everything that might be necessary. And then from just that hub, from that central point, it is distributed wherever it's needed in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And I work with another group, which is actually an international group. There is a couple of British guys there. There is a really awesome girl named Liz. She's, I believe she was born in Latvia. Oh, I hope I'm saying it correctly. But she speaks fluent English, and we have a couple of Ukrainian guys there. So a really fun international team, and they actually go out to the front line. They get requests, direct requests from the units and from the soldiers, what they need. They kind of send them off to me, and mm-hmm. I try to take care of them as much as I can and send it back to them, or at least find some resources for them to mm-hmm. get it. And then they take it back to those units directly.
Interesting. So yes. What is that organization called?
It's called Alex21 for Ukraine. They have a Facebook page.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so when you are doing this, I mean, I'm assuming you don't have any background in procuring military equipment.
No.
So you're a teacher.
Yes. You know what? As a teacher, I always tell my kids, if you put your mind to it, you can learn anything, right? Uh-huh. It's all about gathering information or organizing it in your head. Am I right, mm-hmm. Suki? Yeah. Right? So it's the same thing. You'd be surprised in the last 3 months how much I've learned about, everything from types of bulletproof vests and which helmets are comfortable, which helmets are not comfortable, when they cover the ears and not cover the ears, the types of electronic hearing protection, what kind of... even like the little itty bitty nuances that make a difference, you know, like the tourniquets, the one that stopped bleeding. Apparently there's really good ones and there's really bad ones, and I can sit here and tell you all about it because I had to...
Wow.
Almost ready, you know, I could probably write a paper on it right now. Mm-hmm. I have to research it so much.
To provide a little context, when you last lived in Ukraine, you said, how long ago was that?
Last school year. So last school year we spent, August through May, we spent in Kiev with my family. Uh-huh.
And what is your daily life like there?
There?
Oh, yeah.
Because of the time difference and me working at Pacific time, I would get up at 7:30 in the morning, make breakfast for my kids, send off my kids to training. You know, the one of them does swimming, the other one does diving. They both trained in the morning until lunch, come back, eat lunch at home. Then I would send them off to a Ukrainian school where there are teachers that help them with learning language, basically like ESL, just backwards. It's for you, for Ukrainian. And they would stay there until about, so the school officially ended at 3, but they would stay there until about 5. So they could, can get a little bit extra help with their Ukrainian homework. And they would come back here, they would come back home and have dinner and then get started on their American schooling. So because we kept homeschooling in parallel as well. And then the next day, pretty much everything repeated. My work day started about 4:30 p.m. Ukrainian time. It went on until about 2-3 o'clock in the morning Ukrainian time. And then, you know, go to bed and get up at 7:30.
So that's a crazy schedule. But so like, what, despite the fact that it's a little unusual that the international families often have these sort of unusual schedules and unusual schooling because you're trying to give them schooling in Ukrainian as well as, you know, American style schooling. But other than that, you were just living a normal life, right? Normal.
Yeah. They made friends. They had tons of friends. They went out skiing in the winter. They went to day camps during the school breaks. They went to the stores and cafes for ice cream with their neighbor kids. They spent time with their grandma, which lives also in Kiev, went on bike rides. And a lot of friends that they made in Kiev, my kids still stay in contact with. I made a lot of friends and connections as well. And yeah, like you said, normal life. You go to store, you come back home, make food. Take kids to activities. We went to museums, went to concerts, just like everyday life here.
And then things just changed so suddenly. That's the thing that is really hard to think about for, and I like that, you know, you pointed out that like Dallas, as if Dallas had been leveled, you know, that I think that most Americans have a hard time really picturing this. And, you know, you're not even there, but your life has changed significantly.
Absolutely. You know, I'm not there and it's hard to even sometimes for me to picture it. You know, my friends, they would call me and say, yeah, you remember that school that we went by? Yeah, it's no longer there. You remember that the park that we visited that the kids played at? Yeah, it's no longer there. So there is... not a week goes by where I hear about a funeral that's happening that is somehow connected to me. You remember your classmate's brother? Yeah, he's gone. Do you remember your grandma's friends? You know, that they're gone. So, I mean, like I said, just because it's so personal, it makes it, it makes a different impression.
You are listening to The Babblery. We are speaking with Lydia Getya, a teacher, mom, and volunteer who is helping soldiers and everyday people in her home country of Ukraine.
The survivor's guilt is strong with this one, very strong. And it's not only for me, it's for everyone who's have Ukrainian heritage. I think that's one of the reasons why I split every second of every minute to, you know, doing what I need to do for my family here, as well as doing everything possible and impossible for aid in Ukraine, to support people in Ukraine. Because it's, if I wouldn't be able to do something, I think I would just go insane. So just staying busy and seeing results of my work, being productive and seeing how it helps. That's what kind of keeps me moving and not having meltdowns basically every day.
I can imagine. So more recently, you've been involved in trying to get medication over there. Can you talk about that?
Yes, that has been a struggle to organize because of the FDAC levels of types of medication. We were only able to send previously only over-the-counter types of medication. Mm-hmm. And even that, we're still buying it not a cheap price. We're mm-hmm. able to get some donations, but we still have to raise money for each box, at least at some level, mm-hmm. Even if it's at cost, if it's sold to us at cost.
So so the over-the-counter medications that you've been getting, what sort of things are needed?
Everything from fungal cream, which is extremely needed right now because the weather is heating up and all of the soldiers are wearing very heavy bulletproof vests all day. And they don't have a light proper gear. So they're still wearing, a lot of them wearing winter boots and winter gear. As a result, they get everything from, you know, body rashes and, well, you can only imagine basically wearing heavy and hot equipment all day long. And when we're talking heavy, we're talking like 20 plus pounds just in the vest and mm-hmm. Helmet and all the gear additional. When I was donating some of those vests, I actually tried it on and I tried going three flights of stairs. I was not able to do that. And mm-hmm. I'm definitely not, I consider myself a fit person. Uh-huh. And for me, it was impossible going three flights of stairs in that vest. So they have to be obviously very strong. And everything from eye drops, we're talking reps, we're talking pain medication as in like your aspirin, Tylenol type of things. We're talking flu medication. So everything over the counter, and it has to be in large quantities. The bleed stop medication, reps, everything we can get our hands on. It's mm-hmm. all needed there, and it's needed in large quantities.
And so what companies have you been dealing with drugstore companies or directly with the producers?
We have found some very nice companies that are helping us kind of coordinate through directly through pharmaceutical companies. Mm-hmm. So they're selling it to us at cost.
So what sort of, you know, you said that you're now trying to get some prescription medications over. What kind of prescription medications are needed?
Right now, what's most needed the most is antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication and also insulin. So those basically the top two mm-hmm. that the most requested from both civilian hospitals and military hospitals. A lot of the Ukrainian military is very inexperienced. I will mm-hmm. step back on that. It's not the type of a training that the U.S. military get before they go fight in war. A lot of these boys, yesterday, they were programmers, farmers. And today, after getting 10 days of bare training of how to hold the weapon, they're sent to the front line. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them are psychologically very unprepared of what they're seeing. And you're seeing people dying in front of you. You can't help them. Those are children, women, civilians. You see your friends being standing on landmines and exploding in front of you. You see tears. You see just absolute terror. None of Ukrainian population is prepared for that, and not civilian, not military. And as a result, there's a lot of anxiety attacks, and doctors and psychiatrists are having to basically figure out a way how to help these people and help them continue to function. Mm-hmm. Because the stories that I've heard in a lot of cases when you see your wife to be blown up to pieces. When you see I have to tell you, this was just a horrible story where an elderly couple and grandma was blown up basically in front of her husband. He just took a wheelbarrow and brought the remains of her body back to the house and buried. And that was in Mariupol. The family only found out, so there's no connection in Mariupol, that that happened only months later. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have to figure out how to function and how to continue to live when you see children dying, when you see your mom or dad dying in horrible death. It just kills the will to live. It kills any desire to function. So the anti-anxiety medication will be life-saving, not only for civilians, but also for the military, who's, like I said, was completely unprepared and, you know, just fighting on sheer will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what is the process for trying to get this to happen? Who are you dealing with?
We found a wonderful lawyer who is writing a request to receive FDIC level approval to export basically medication, a prescription and medication from US to Ukraine. If we receive this FDIC level approval, we'll be able to purchase medication here, and we have to make sure that there is a proper chain of custody. So it's only transferred from doctor to doctor, and there no chain of custody is broken. And it goes to the right places, and it goes to the correct hands every single mm-hmm. time. It doesn't end up on black market or something like that.
So the lawyer is working with them to try to figure out how to do this. And yeah. And would that be a doctor, I guess, in Ukraine, and then you'd transfer yes. the yeah. medications there?
I already have spoken to Ukraine, to the doctor who's linked to the Ukrainian Ministry of Health. So he assured me there'll be no problem with the paperwork or connections on their side. Right now, we have to make sure that the transportation, because the transportation of medication happens by a humanitarian aid company that has nothing to do with medication, just a humanitarian organization, that while it's transported from point A in the U.S. to the custody of the doctors in Ukraine, there is no break in the chain of custody there.
So it seems like you've been on quite an odyssey this year, in these last few months. How is it affecting your family and your sense of life in the United States?
I have to give props to my family. My husband has been the most wonderful in the sense that he picked up so much responsibilities that usually would fall upon me in the family, you know, pick up, drop off from kids from activities, cooking and stuff like that. Very understanding if I'm staying up half the night, making phone calls and keeping things organized. And I can tell both of my girls, even though they're only 12 and 10, have really matured. And I remember a couple of months after the war started, we were driving somewhere, and I said to my girls, "I'm sorry, girls. I feel like I've been really neglecting you and not giving you enough attention the last few months, and I feel guilty for that." And their reaction moved me to tears because they said, "Mom, how could you even say that? You're saving people's life. I mean, we're going to do everything that we can do to make sure that you have time to do so." And they have. Both of the girls have really stepped up to give me that free time to, you know, to volunteer more. Everything from helping around the house to making sure that their homework done and they're prepared for their swim meets, and reminding me about whatever training or gathering that I forgot about.
You are listening to special International Women's Day programming on KPFA Radio. This is The Babblery, working, parenting, playing, voting, advocating, and creating as women.
More information can be found at www.babbelry.com. We've been listening to what homeschooling mom and teacher Lydia Getya was doing to help her native country of Ukraine, mostly working to help people she didn't know early in the war. She also spoke about the toll her work was taking on her own family at the time. But as the war has dragged on, she stepped up in the most personal way imaginable. Let's listen to Victoria's story now.
So when war began, I was studying at Kyiv. I have like a business trip to Kyiv because I'm working in a company that cooperates with foreign companies, and we are selling lamella or veneer from oak, made from oak, to the Europe. So I was in Kyiv, I was studying, we had the third day of our courses, and early in the morning, I heard sounds, very loud sounds, and a window was shimmering, but I couldn't believe that something is going on, that something bad is going on. I was laying in a bed, but couldn't sleep. So then I heard again the same sound, and again and again. Then I tried to call to my colleague that was in the same hotel that I was, and we were talking about the sounds. She asked me to switch on my TV, and then I saw Putin on the screen, and then our president, and I couldn't understand what is going on, you know. Then I was trying to go home. It was a very long trip. I took just my small bag and went out from the hotel, just put the key on the table and then go out to find somebody with whom I could go home, because I was around 500 kilometers from my town. So there I have found a boy that was living not far from my origin. It was from Rivne. And we were looking for a car that may take us to our homes. So it was a big, big shock for everybody, because while trip, I was ready that I will not come back. Because while going home, we were observing how people are like running with their bags, with their dogs, cats, children on their arms, and they're trying to find out safe place. What will be then? We didn't know. We just had like hope for something, for the miracle that everything will be okay. Yeah. It was the worst day in my life, I think, because I said goodbye to all my family, wrote some short messages to my friends, and it was all. Then, thanks God, I came back home. It took me 2 days to go, to get to home, and I was with my family for several days. We were discussing what to do, to go abroad maybe or to stay here. We didn't know what to do because we are living near the border to Belarus, and as you know, Russia and Belarus are like cooperating. But we've decided to stay because our parents didn't want to go, and telling the truth, me too. You know, the best place is home, so we decided to stay. Now, we are living, we are trying to live the same life, but we cannot do this because the bomb attacks are not very often in our origin, you know, just several times for the last month. But we have these alarms, we have to hide our children also to the shallows, and we do not have electricity all day long. We have breaks when we do not have it. So many companies are closed, many shops are also closed. We have opportunity to buy food, water, everything, but it's not the same as we have before.
Yeah.
Everything is gray, dark, and it's not as it has to be before holidays, you know?
Yeah.
We don't know how to dream, how to dream. Children are asking for presents. We are buying something to make them happy, but no happiness in the air. So, no, this, I don't know. Yeah. You may not like feel free yourself to dream. You may not plan just for tomorrow. That's all. For months, it's impossible to plan something. So the days are the same. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all the same. Go to work, come back home, cook, clean, children, family. But we are happy that we have this, that we have family, that we have opportunity to come back home, that we have it. I have friends that that are living in Kyiv, also relatives that are living in Kyiv. I have friends that live in Poltava, in Kharkiv. So it's hard to believe how people are living there. It's very dangerous. It's very hard. It's impossible to believe how they live, how they have, I don't know, even. They are very brave. They yes. are very brave.
As the war continues in Ukraine, everyday people find themselves in the position of having to make extraordinary decisions. Speaking just before the Christmas holiday, Victoria talks about the life they are leading now and what led up to the decision that their teenage son could no longer stay in Ukraine with his family. In this final segment, we'll hear how Lydia, safe back in the United States, sees another opportunity to help people in her home country, this time in a very personal way.
For last week, we had three soldiers that came back home, and we had three funeral ceremonies in our town. So just for last week.
Yeah.
These soldiers were very young men, just 27, 24 years old. So it's not fair. It's not fair. I don't know. Tell the truth, we have everything what we need, material things, food, water, a roof over our heads, we have work, we have opportunity to go to the street and walk and to go to the shop and to go, I don't know, to relatives, to see them, to talk with somebody. Yes, we have everything, all this stuff, we have it, but it's not the same that we had before. My younger son is 6 years old. He goes to school It is his first year at school. He's studying. He's trying to study because our classes are shorter than usual because we don't have electricity at school, just several hours. So they may go just for several classes. He doesn't understand everything, as I see. He knows that is war. We are talking about this. We are not afraid to talk. He is asking questions. He knows much from news. We are watching news together. And we are discussing because we want him to understand everything. It's difficult to explain why we have this situation, but and why we do not have opportunity to go somewhere. Why many his friends is abroad. They had to move. It's hard to explain why we don't have internet, electricity, and sometimes water. Why his older brother had to go abroad. But it's so. I don't know, maybe we have to ask somebody what to do because he doesn't want to paint. He liked to do it before war and now he doesn't know what to paint. Mm. My older son is now in the USA. So I took him on October to our friend Lydia. She's a very kind person. She's Ukrainian and she now is a citizen of United States. She has a very beautiful family, two adorable daughters, Ira and Natalia. And one day, Lydia calls us and she proposed to take our older son to USA and that she will help us with this because there he will have opportunity to study. So he likes United States. He likes his school very much and his classmates. Now he's swimming, he's studying. His swimming team is very also cool. He's talking much about people that are supporting them. Not even Lydia with her family. They are very kind and a very so open-hearted person. I don't know how kind you have to be to take another children to your family. I cannot explain. Yes. Because it's not easy sometimes with your own children, but with children from your friend or other family, it's very hard. It's very hard. Besides, she has daughters and she took, like she says, not a boy, I took a son. Mm. So she, yeah. She names herself that she is a new mom for Stas. So my older son is his name is Stas, but in USA at school he is named Stan. he likes his new name. It's easier to pronounce, like Stan.
Uh-huh. It's I guess it's an adventure for a young teenager to get to change his name and his place. And
yeah, so. You know, yes, but now he is like smiling, he's laughing more. When he was here, he was he doesn't talk even much, because I think that younger children like do not understand the situation, the whole situation, what is going on. But teenagers, they are not easy if everything is okay. They have their own problems, their own opportunity to the situations. But now I think that teenagers are very like, they are not open with their problems. They are closing here. They don't want to talk why they are sad, why they do not want to eat, even to study, to go and to play and to with their friends. I don't know. My son was sitting all the summer at home, and he doesn't want even to go for a walk with his friends. I don't know why, but now when he is not here, he is not at home, like he has another life. He has opportunity to speak with happy people.
Mm-hmm.
Here everyone is like, no, I cannot say that we are unhappy. No, but even in the air, you feel all the sadness, all this darkness. It's different, because while I was with Stas in USA, I was there during 3 weeks, so I felt this difference. Just when you go abroad, you feel this difference, because we even forget that we had another life. We forget this. We are like, live in another world, in another, like in a dream maybe, that never ends. It seems that everything is okay because you are alive, your children are okay, you have everything what you need to have for life, but it's not the same. I don't know how to explain.
I can imagine that it's hard because you can't really think into the future.
Yeah, you cannot plan. You cannot plan, and you can't plan for your children, because you don't know what will be here in a year if war will not be ended. I don't know, the third part maybe of our country even. Oh, no, maybe the half of the country is so... it's hard to explain me. Not enough words. In such a horrible situation that people had to move, all buildings are destroyed. No electricity, no water, nothing. So even if war will be ended now, we need maybe 10, maybe 20, maybe more years to rebuild everything, to renew everything. And what will be with our children here? They don't have opportunity to study, to enter the university. And what then? It's hard to plan something. Even holidays, we may not plan even our holidays. We will have soon Christmas, New Year. But what we will have, we don't know.
Tell me what it's like for you as a mom how it's changed for you, that you can't plan for your children, and you have children that are in very different stages of life. So it must be very different for the two of them.
You know, everything has changed. Everything, because I wanted my older son to study abroad, sure, but I was dreaming that it will be his choice to, after he will be graduated his school, and after school he will enter university, maybe in USA, maybe in Europe, I don't know. It could be your choice, not the choice that had to be done before. He's not so old, enough old to go somewhere without his parents. What about younger son? He is missing his older brother, his best friend. Now he's alone here. I and my husband, we are trying to support him, but it's not the same. He is afraid to stay alone at night. So he is escaping from his room to our bed every night because he is afraid of something. So everything is different. It will never be the same as it was before, because we had to face many different other problems, and all these problems have changed us, our lives and ourselves. I think that now I am more strong as personality, but I am at the same time more closed. I do not want to dream because I am not sure that I will be able to get something in future. So I do not want to be upset because of this. I don't know. I liked to read before the war. Now I do not want to read, because when I read, I cannot be involved into the book. I all the time thinking about the same. I cannot be like in a book. When I am doing something, I am thinking about the same, that I am missing my son, that he is not with me. I am happy that he has opportunity to study and to stay in safe place. I am happy for this, really. And I know that I couldn't find better family for him than Lydia's family, because I like them so much. It's not the same thing to be all together around the table and talking and having supper and chatting and laughing, because every call begins from words, "Are you okay? How are you? Are you okay?" We just want everything be like the same that it was before. You know, before a war, everyone was thinking that we are a usual country, we are usual people, but now we know how strong we are. And all the situation, it's like made everyone another person. We like changed, not even from bad side, because we all are sad, upset, and unhappy, but we are stronger. We are so brave nation that I couldn't believe that we are. So even if somebody is not here in Ukraine, maybe somebody had to move to another country, doesn't matter. I'm sure everyone feels the same, that we are strong and someday everything will be okay. I hope that no one will feel what we are feeling now, because this reality which we have, it's horrible, because you don't know what will be tomorrow. And when you are mom, is very hard. It's a situation, not stable situations, that you don't know what to do. Even when you hear this alarm, you don't know what to do, to hide or to move, to go to the car and to move somewhere. You know, we know, we understand that we are not alone because everybody is trying to help us. What about American people? What about people from Poland, from other countries? Everyone is trying to help us. So we are feeling this support. We are feeling that we are not alone in this world. We know that it's hard, that we have to struggle, that we have to fight, but we also know that we are not alone. It also helps because from everywhere we are getting help. It's even hard to believe how people are so generous, are so kind, that they are ready to give what they have just to help people that even they do not know them.
I followed up with Lydia by telephone to find out how Stan is doing in the U.S. She told me that the easy decision to take him into their home spawned a whole new idea. While the war rages in Ukraine, Lydia has reinvented herself yet again, this time as an exchange student coordinator. Along with Stan, she has placed 10 other teens in homes around Kansas City, with another arriving soon. She said the teens are thriving, building their own little community far from home. They plan to mark February 24th, the one-year anniversary of the full invasion of Ukraine, with a visit to the World War I Memorial in Kansas City. Lydia was full of news about Stan, who finished his school swim team season and is looking for an after-school job. They've been making summer plans, something that hits home because of how distressing Victoria says it is to Ukrainian teens that they are no longer able to make plans for their future. Stan's parents call every few days to check in, and Lydia says she's sending as many pictures and videos as humanly possible. About Victoria, Lydia says, "Most days she is doing better and able to stay positive and look forward, having hope for a better tomorrow." I keep remembering what Lydia told me the first time I talked to her, early in the war when she had set about learning how to source medical supplies. "As a teacher, I always tell my kids, if you put your mind to it, you can do anything." Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The Babblery, working, parenting, playing, voting, advocating, and creating as women. Please subscribe on all major podcast platforms and visit www.babblery.com for more information. The Babblery is produced with support from KSQD Radio in Santa Cruz, California. Thanks to KPFA Radio for hosting The Babblery on today's special International Women's Day programming.